The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times and the Washington Post. Before we begin our journey today, let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we learn about floating hotels and then take a trip to visit some unique lodges in New Zealand. Now, we're going to begin with Nora Walsh's story, Six Floating Hotels Where Gentle Waves Will Rock You to Sleep. The article appeared in the November 10, 2025 issue of the New York Times. As the editors noted, leave your worries on the shore at resorts in places like the Azure Caribbean Bay, a crystal-clear Cambodian river, and a pristine Thai lake. Let us begin so you can enjoy these endeavors. Gently swaying, listening to the whisper of the waves, nothing puts you to sleep quite like being on the water. But you don't have to go on a cruise or a charter or a sailboat for the experience. Floating hotels offer the same serenity without the commitment. Travelers seeking respite, as well as eco-conscious options, are increasingly searching out floating hotels. The market for these hotels, whether they're on rivers, lakes, or seas, is growing, reaching $1.8 billion globally in 2023. And it's expected to nearly double by 2030, according to a report by Strategic Market Research. From the Florida Keys to the heart of Paris and the jungles of Southeast Asia, floating hotels are popping up to offer visitors a chance to sample life on the water while staying close to land. Now we're going to travel to some specific sites, and we're going to start with the Florida Keys. Ambi, a recently opened trio of upscale bungalows, delivers the perks of a traditional land-based hotel while floating in Buttonwood Sound just off the coast of Key Largo. We have nice linens, comfortable beds, kitchenettes, and for those that want it, air conditioning, TVs, and Wi-Fi, said Tim Jensen. He's the owner. Each stay starts with a private boat transfer from the dock of Snook's Bayside Restaurant and Grand Tiki Bar. Guests are whisked off to private thatched roof bungalows equipped with Nespresso coffee makers, electric blinds, and interior and exterior wireless speakers. The restaurant will deliver dinner to the bungalow for a $60 fee. Outside, wraparound decks have overwater hammocks, Adirondack chairs, and a host of water toys, including kayaks, paddleboards, snorkels, masks, and fins. The area is rich in marine life, and we made sure the structure wasn't corrosive to the ecosystem in any way, Mr. Jensen said. Last year, Brigham Berthold, a 38-year-old writer, and his wife left the kids at home in South Carolina for a romantic retreat at Ambi. During the day, the couple opened the unit's glass sliding walls and blasted their favorite music, took afternoon swims, and meditated in the reading nook to the sounds of the sea. After sunset, a big full moon rose and bioluminescent jellies were bobbing around the deck, he said. It was gorgeous. This style of relaxation, Mr. Jensen said, was the reason he built the bungalows. We wanted to create something that was not only unique, but also restorative. From $800 per night, including one round-trip boat transfer, and each additional transfer cost you $60. Well, next up is the Caribbean. Aqualodge's 860-square-foot floating Caribbean villas feature two bedrooms, a kitchen with an observation window in the floor to view marine life, a sun deck with a grill, and a rooftop terrace with 360-degree views. Prospective guests can choose to stay in Guadalupe. There are four in St. Francois Lagoon and one in the archipelago Les Saints, or Martinique, where there are five near St. Anne. Now, Philippe Chevalier, the founder of Aqualodge, got into the floating hotel business because his charter company was fielding recurring requests from clients wanting to spend a few nights on a boat anchored in the harbor, explained Ameline Rodriguez, a sales and operations manager at Aqualodge, now owned by Dream Yacht Charter. The most challenging task Mr. Chevalier faced, Ms. Rodriguez said, was making sure each villa was environmentally friendly. Now, upon arrival, guests learn how to operate the villa's motorized dinghy. Once they get the hang of it, they have the freedom to cruise the waters or discover the islands by land, said Ms. Rodriguez. Guests can also paddleboard, kayak, snorkel, or fish directly from the deck. Starting at 200 euros, that's about 230 U.S. dollars, which includes round-trip boat transfers, a private dinghy and fuel, use of water toys, and a cleaning service upon checkout. Well, next is the Brazilian Amazon. Floating accommodations make perfect sense in the Mirauá, a sustainable redevelopment reserve in the Brazilian Amazon, one of the largest flooded ecosystems in the world, typically under 20 to 50 feet of water from May to August. In the late 1990s, local communities in the reserve banded together with the Mirauá Institute for Sustainable Development, a nonprofit conservation group, to build the Wakari Lodge using wood from the native Asuku tree. This construction method has been used for generations by the local people to understand the rainforest and its dynamics, said Lucas Ramos, the lodge's operational manager. Situated between the Sumalmois and the Yapura rivers, the 10-room hotel rises and falls with seasonal fluctuations, making it a year-round destination that's both adaptive and sustainable. Now, the solar-powered bungalows are rustic yet comfortable, with private bathrooms, screened windows, and verandas with nature views. Guests can socialize in the floating restaurant, which has an upstairs library. For complete forest immersion, visitors can book the hotel's jungle treehouse to sleep in hammocks. Activities led by local guides with a deep knowledge of the trails, forest, and wildlife include canoe excursions during the wet season to spot pink river dolphins and black caimans, piranha fishing, hikes during low water periods, visits to local communities, and meeting scientists at the research station. As a community-based tourism project, revenues both support the Mirauá communities and the Institute's conservation efforts in the region. Starting at 5,090 Brazilian reais, or about 950 U.S. dollars per person for a three-night stay, this includes transfers from the Tefé Airport between 1 and 2.5 hours away by boat, depending on water levels. The price includes all meals and standard activities with a three-night minimum. The treehouse costs an additional 300 reais per night. Now on to Paris. Well, the Seine flows through the core of buzzing, touristy Paris, and once you step off its banks, you may feel an overwhelming sense of peace. Our guests love being rocked to sleep by the soft waves, says Elias Dehert, the general manager off Paris Seine, a purpose-built boat moored on the left bank near the historic railway terminal, and this is Gardeau Ster Austerlitz. Now, the 58-room hotel, opened since 2016, features a bright central atrium and views of either the 13th Androdeusmont streetscape or the river. Now, the cozy doubles have nautical decor, large windows and TVs, while four colored themed suites have seating areas, balconies, and large standalone soaking tubs. Outside, guests lounge around the swimming pool and a stern side deck, while local residents sidle up to the bar for crowd-favorite cocktails like the Spritz Violette with violet liqueur, and then you have sparkling wine and sparkling water. Now, the restaurant dishes out seasonal sharing plates, including gravlax with chorizo cakes, and during the summer, hotel guests receive discounted pricing and perks on Green River's small group Seine cruises, and next year the hotel plans to debut a year-round water shuttle for guests to get around the city. All that starts at about 190 euros. Now it's on to Thailand, the pristine waters of Cheolan Lake, amid the limestone cliffs and protected rainforest of southern Thailand's Khao Sak National Park, are home to a growing collection of floating resorts. Historically, Thai communities have lived closely connected to the water through floating houses, river markets, and houseboats, says Atirat. This is a name and a half here. Watch this. Dadafat Harawarawat, the owner of two resorts in 500 Ray and 360 degrees Isara. Our floating resorts are a modern evolution of this heritage, he says. Now, Mr. Dadafat Harawarawat, who is from the area, opened 500 Ray in 2012, aiming to represent local culture and create better livelihoods for members of his community. The 20 low-impact bamboo reclaimed wood villas feature private decks with panoramic views, air conditioning, and ensuite bathrooms stocked with cotton robes. Guests can swim or float in the pool, practice lakeside yoga, or join workshops on topics like Thai cooking and palm leaf weaving. Excursions take guests on boat safaris, jungle hikes to waterfalls and cave explorations, as well as cultural visits to the nearby village of Ban Ta Kun, local markets and historic temples. Now, building on 500 Ray's success, Mr. Dadafat Harawarawat opened 360 degrees Isara in March with larger villas that accommodate groups of families and friends. Guests there enjoy the same cultural programming and nature-based outings as the 500 Ray, and there's also a daily shuttle between the two properties for guests to take advantage of both hotels' amenities. Rates at 500 Ray start at 22,000 Thai baht, or about 679 U.S. dollars, with a two-night minimum stay. Rates at 360 degrees Isara start at 17,000 baht, with no minimum stay requirement. Now let's go to our final stop, which is in Cambodia. The Canvas and Orchids Retreat, a 15-room eco-lodge on the Thai River in Cambodia, offers 10 luxury tents on pontoons. Each tent has a private deck with a canoe or kayak, solar-powered electricity, a rain shower, and woven furniture made with native water hyacinth plants. An on-land restaurant with authentic cuisine like the curry-based fish amok, Cambodia's national dish, while massage therapists offer intent treatments. Now, Valentine and Anna Pollock opened the retreat in 2009 after years of working in Cambodia's river cruise industry. The couple were inspired by the floating villages along the Tonle Sap River, which encompass homes, schools, and markets. It sparked the idea of creating something similar for travelers, said Mr. Pollock. It wasn't just about novelty. It was about adaptability, resilience, and a profound connection to nature. They chose the location in the Cardamom Mountains to support conservation efforts by creating local jobs that would offer alternatives to hunting, logging, or poaching. In this way, the retreat became part of a larger ecosystem of preservation and community upliftment, he explained. In April, Yogeswari Eichenberger, a nonprofit founder and yoga teacher based in New York, visited the lodge after several friends recommended it to her. She said she spent morning practicing yoga on her deck and then swimming in the crystal clear river, then participated in nature activities offered at the lodge. With several other guests, she ventured to the Tai Tai waterfalls in a traditional wooden boat for $39 and also kayaked in the nearby mangroves. That started at $59. Other excursions include trekking in the mountains, which begins at $15, then visiting local villages starting at $15, and taking evening firefly tours. Those are free. Now, I love the whole sensation of staying on the water, said Ms. Eichenberger. It was so soothing just to sit and listen to the waves lap against the platform. And the tents, by the way, start at $198 per night, and that includes breakfast. Wow. Well, it's time to leave our floating paradise, and we're going to head down under to learn about four luxurious New Zealand lodges where the scenery is the star. Daniel Scheffler's story appeared in the November 11th, 2025 issue of the New York Times. Arriving in Christchurch, New Zealand, feels low-key. A short walk from the gate to a rental car counter, a city center that's more gardens than skyline, cafes that know the difference between a flat white and a long black. I picked up a black four-wheel drive vehicle and a paper map, a reminder that out on the South Island, cell service might just fade, and that roads could narrow to one-lane bridges. The plan was simple. Drive south to Queenstown and let the lodges set the cadence. New Zealand is known for its lodges, many of them originally modeled on colonial estates built for hunting and fishing, but in recent years, they have evolved. Many are now contemporary retreats rooted less in formality than in a sense of place. Some are starkly remote. Others embrace wellness, food, or quiet luxury. Each draws its identity from the surrounding land, which often feels like the main character. Now, many require a two-night minimum stay and offer inclusive packages covering guided hikes, gourmet meals, and occasionally wine tastings. With almost 10 days to spend, I booked two nights at four distinct lodges, each one a counterpoint to the last, leaving gaps for coffee, short walks, and the kinds of roadside views worth stopping for. Each stop offered a different story, a private bay, a culinary outpost, a stargazer's retreat, a lakeside sanctuary. The road between them, with its wild herbs, late lunches, and detours with no name, told a story, too. If there's a single luxury in this part of the world, it's time. The trick is to take it. Scrubby Bay, a secluded start. Christchurch to Queenstown is only about 300 miles, but those miles stretch out through the country, limestone valleys, glacial lakes, and alpine ridges. The roads meander past rolling farmland, rugged mountains, and glacial-fed rivers to so turquoise they almost seem unreal. On a map, the distances look modest, yet the terrain tucks and looms. 2 hours turn into three with a detour or perhaps a sheep crossing, and the geography all but encourages lodge hopping. Now, about 90 minutes southeast of Christchurch, the road to Scrubby Bay slices inland through farmland, then scales the ridge lines of the Banks Peninsula. The lodge, part of the larger Annandale Estate, sits in a private bay accessible only by four-wheel drive or helicopter. From above, it's barely visible, long cedar-clad building tucked against a hillside facing the Pacific Ocean. This is a self-catered lodge. Though meals can be prearranged, if you wish. Now, the first night, we grilled veggies on the patio to the sound of waves. By morning, the only movement was sheep on a distant hill. We spent our time doing quiet coastal walks along the bay, followed by long soaks in a heated pool. You can also bike on the property or book spa treatments. No reception desk, no room service, just uninterrupted space, the kind that quietly resets your sense of time, about 18,000 New Zealand dollars or about 10,165 U.S. dollars for two guests for two nights in the Scrubby Bay Villa. Now, after 2 days, we slipped back on the road, and the scenery shifted quickly as the car climbed toward Arthur's Pass, which serves as a gateway between the Canterbury and West Coast regions. When we reached Castle Hill with its dramatic limestone formations, I decided to pull over and wander among the piles of giant boulders. This is where the first two movies in the Chronicles of Narnia series were filmed. New Zealand is full of short, wondrous detours, and this was one of them. About 3 hours from Scrubby Bay, tucked into the Craigieburn Range, Flockhill sits on a 36,000-acre working sheep station where thousands of Merino Romney roam. The lodge itself, just seven guest villas plus four-bedroom homestead villa, is all understated and deeply considered. The focal point for a stay here are the meals, which are served at Sugarloaf, the restaurant, and the simple stone and glass main lodge. Guests gather around a single table for multi-course dinners shaped by foraging and fermentation, alpine herbs, wild honey, dry-aged meats from the surrounding land. A spa is slated to open later this year, but for now it's the most intimate, immersive experience. Time here is simple. One morning I joined the Kiwi-born chef, Taylor Cullen, to pick greens from their garden in that same evening. I watched the sheepdogs at work across the wild valley. Now, rates for this range from $5,000 a night for a junior suite to, get this, $25,860 $75 per night for a buyout of the four-bedroom lodge. Now, coffee and cheese on the road is our next section. Leaving Flock Hill and setting south, the road flattened into farmland. I took the advice of a sheep herder about stopping in Geraldine, a small inland town with an unexpectedly strong food culture. At Verde Cafe, locals line up for flat whites and house-baked scones, while a side market sold pickles, preserves, and foraged ingredients. Nearby, Talbot Forest Cheese offered tastings of aged cheddar and sheep's milk porcarino, worth stashing in the car for impromptu picnics that lay ahead. The drive south led me through the Mackenzie Basin, where ochre fields, gave way to bright glacial lakes. In Lake Tekapo, I stopped for coffee at the Greedy Cow, a relaxed cafe known for its eggs, granola, and pastries. I sat outside on a bench just watching a slow mill of locals coming by for provisions. Then we stop at the Lindy, Stillness in the Valley. By the time I arrived in the Ahuriria Valley, I felt like the world had quieted down. The Lindy's blends into the hillside, its undulating roofline designed to mimic the contours of the valley. The main lodge has just five rooms, but the real draw may be the mirrored pods on a short walk away. Standalone suites with panoramic views of the river and sky. Even inside, you feel like you're outdoors. Gas can be taken by helicopter to remote streams to fish for trout, ride horses through the high country, or simply sit still and watch the sky change. I chose the last option. In the evenings, I sat alone outside with a wool blanket and watched stars appear slowly, then all at once. Now, the rates for 2026 coming up will start from $3,015 per night for a pod for two adults. Wine and open roads. After Lindy's, I detour to the Central Otago District to visit the tasting room at the South Island outpost of Cloudy Bay, New Zealand's well-known winemakers in Cromwell. Their restaurant's called The Shed. It offered a quiet counterpoint to the label's busier Marlborough estate where their first vineyards were planted. I sat on the terrace and tasted their dark and intense Te Wawe Pinawa, grown in nearby glacial soils with notes of dusky brambles, wild strawberries, and hints of violet. Lunch here is simple but thoughtful. Local cheeses, smoked fish, heirloom tomatoes with olive oil and sea salt. From the winery, the road winds past Lake Dunstan and along the Clutha River. I pulled over one last time, no plan, just a roadside lookout, and stayed longer than I meant to. Now we take a quick peek at Roki, which is a gentle return. My final stop was Roki Collection Queenstown, a new wellness-focused lodge set across from Lake Wakatipu and right in Queenstown. It was the perfect contrast to the others, less remote, more restorative. Here, the focus is on stillness, tranquility, and wellness. The hydrotherapy circuits, individualized spa treatments, and minimalist suites designed to calm rather than impress. Everything faces the lake, even the yoga studio. After a week of silence and sweeping views, Roki felt like a soft landing, a place to gather yourself before re-entering the world. Bed and breakfast rates range from $1,800 to $32,000, depending on accommodation. So quite a trip there, huh? Well, we've got one final thing to do before we wrap up today's thing, and this is just going to be an excerpt. A tongue-in-cheek opinion piece, if you will, by Chris Nong. It appeared in the July 25, 2025 issue of the Washington Post. It's headlined, "Which Airline Personality Are You?" As the subhead states, will you do anything to save a buck? Do you live for the lounge? Well, here's our totally correct rundown of your friends. Whatever carrier you're loyal to, this very tongue-in-cheek breakdown might make you rethink your next booking or at least provide a laugh or two. United Airlines, like clockwork, you're back in Europe for the summer. You have a glass of Aperol Spritz, Tinto de Verano, or French 75 in hand, set against an idyllic background. But you're not just hopping around to the tourist-heavy spots. Think Bilbao, Spain, instead of Barcelona, or Ponta Delgada, Portugal, instead of Paris. Over the years, United has built a reputation for flying nonstop to lesser-known destinations, and you're definitely on one of those flights. The airline serves more international cities than any other U.S. carrier, and 40 of them are unique to United, according to a 2024 news release. Earlier this year, new flights launched to Nuuk, Greenland, Madeira, Portugal, and Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. Then we have Alaska Airlines. We get it. You love the outdoors, have a countercultural sensibility, and buy only organic. Oh, a Santa Cruz mountain bike might be part of your personality. Unfortunately, that mode of transport is not conducive to getting to the Pacific Northwest from the East Coast in a timely or comfortable manner. Alaska Airlines is for those who lean a little crunchy and plan to travel out west. A Seattle-based airline, it's not headquartered in the state it's named after, Alaska goes to destinations with gorgeous natural surroundings nearby. Think Portland, Oregon, San Diego, and San Francisco. Now, the caveat, well, the carrier has a small footprint east of the Rockies. Thankfully, you can fly with your bike. Then we have Delta Airlines. You're the fashion-forward, confident, and dependable friend. Delta has built a solid reputation over the years thanks to operational reliability, service, and better-than-average lounges. In fact, the Delta One lounges, reserved for business-class passengers, are some of the best in the United States, featuring sit-down dining, wellness services, and a serene environment. Thankfully, these pre-flight refuges do not have lines to enter them, unlike Delta's more widely accessible Skies Clubs. You do have a sense of style, just like Delta's partnership with Italian fashion house Missoni. These chic little onboard amenity kits, well, they're obsessed. Flying Delta has become something of a status symbol, just like your shiny American Express Platinum card. However, at the end of the day, you still have to connect through Atlanta with a 30-minute layover. Now, Southwest Airlines, all your friends used to love you, but you've changed. You used to pick people up from the airport, but now you ask them to Uber. You were kind, you were generous, and you were funny, but after some careful reflection and boundary setting, you decided it was time to be like every other friend. You're a guest get to sleep in the spare bedroom for free, so why should you deal with traffic and greet them too? Well, Southwest Airlines, long famous for its bags fly free policy, ditched its signature perk of allowing up to 2 free checked bags per passenger. It's also disbanding its open seating policy in favor of assigned seats. So Southwest is just like every other airline now. Then we have Spirit Airlines, and we're going to wrap up with this one. You all love saving the buck, but at what cost? You haven't eaten all day. You're the last to arrive at the group trip, and you paid $70 to check a bag. Your total savings flying another airline? Well, $5. And then finally, JetBlue, you waited too long to book friends' trip. Prices went up, and now you're taking a solo trip to Fort Lauderdale instead of joining your friends in a remote locale. So, we continue that. It's not really a bad option, really. JetBlue's strength lies with its hubs in the East Coast. In other words, your destination choices with the airline are predominantly centered in 4 areas, Florida, New York, Boston, or bust. Now, Spirit is far from perfect. It's extremely affordable, also riddled with fees. There are very clear rules to abide by and avoid suffering, but clearly you don't follow them. For instance, it's not the carrier to fly for long distances, such as going across country. So there you go, some opinion pieces there by Chris Nong. And again, just to be clear, those are Chris's opinions and not those of the North Carolina Reading Service nor myself. So thought it would be fun just to kind of take a look at where airlines stand today and how some passengers see them. Chris did a lot of interviews, by the way, at different locations to get these opinion pieces put together, and I thought it was a very interesting article. And again, it was in the Washington Post and appeared in the July 25th edition of this year. And that, my friends, is going to bring us to the end of today's journey of Armchair Traveler. We certainly hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. And I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And I remind you, Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, and that is ncreadingservice.org. The website, once again, ncreadingservice.org. You can also find previous programs, too, if you'd like to check back. Now, if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. So just give us a call if you have questions or comments. We'd love to hear from you. Again, thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.